Good morning, good people. This is Kiplin Primus, your host for the local take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning, we're talking with attorney Sherry Jefferson. Sherry, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So we're talking about human sex trafficking, but from a different angle this time, in a program that has a hashtag 7Ps. Can you tell us what the 7Ps stand for?
Yes, 17Ps is a program that and curriculum and a campaign that was and is implemented through the African American Juvenile Justice Project and Female Not Female with two E's. And what it is entitled to do is allow for these 17Ps as in Paul to come together in an effort to end sex trafficking with an emphasis on juvenile urban sex trafficking. And the 17Ps are developed in a curriculum and a campaign, which is a four-track system. One is under community and its parents, the role of the pastor and principal. That's level one. And then level two within the community track is prostitute, the pimp, the panderer, and the profiteer. And then the second track is the healthcare track and mental health services, which includes the role of the physician, psychologist, psychiatrist, and the pharmaceutical industry in providing programs and services for victims of human sex trafficking. And then the CJ is the third track, which is criminal justice, and it includes the role of the police, the prosecutor, and the prison system. And the last track is the advocacy track, and that includes the role of the press or mainstream media and urban media and social media, as well as politicians.
So, Sherry, the 17Ps, it's a curriculum, and this is a curriculum for who?
This is a curriculum that the African American Juvenile Justice Project has developed that we disseminate to schools, to churches, to communities, and to even victims who are victims of human sex trafficking. We also provide literature and information to members within the healthcare track. So these four tracks receive curriculum, program, and service guides through us, but we also use it for our upcoming social media events and where we educate, engage, and empower people by using Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook in an effort to educate people about sex trafficking and human trafficking. We do Twitter storms. We do advocacy activities to bring awareness through Facebook as well as through Instagram. And that includes, but is not limited to, the chats as well as webinars.
And is that where the hashtag 17Ps fits in?
Yes, that's exactly where it fits in.
Now, you mentioned earlier that this is about sex trafficking of urban youth. Tell our listeners, what is the difference with targeting urban youth and why the focus needs to be there?
Thank you for asking that question. It's a great question. Oftentimes when we hear about sex trafficking or human trafficking, the terms are used synonymously. But the emphasis of human trafficking, according to the United Nations definition and federal law, is the trafficking in persons through recruitment, transportation, harboring, usually through means of force, duress, violence, fraud, etc., with the intent to engage these persons in sex, labor, or organ removal. And that generally was a focus on international. And then we developed new terms called domestic trafficking, which was to address what was happening on American soil. But over the course of the last 15 years, the emphasis has and continues to be on the adverse impact that human trafficking and sex trafficking has on the international community, girls from India, Asia, the Latino communities in Central America and South America, as well as Russia, with very little, if any, emphasis at all on the plight of urban children, particularly those of African-American communities. And so we, through the African-American Juvenile Justice Project, coined the term urban trafficking or urban sex trafficking, UST or UT, to give an opportunity to address the experiences of girls who are victims of sexual exploitation from urban corridors and epicenters in major cities throughout the United States, who benefit from the sale of young girls and boys for purposes of sex trafficking.
Now, in Georgia, recently we passed Rachel's Law. There is another initiative, I think, to help continue to fund Rachel's Law. What else needs to be done? What else can we as a community do to shed the light on sex trafficking and to help those members of our community, young girls and young boys, who've gotten caught up in that system?
Okay, you've asked three questions, and I'm going to break them down by the way they were asked. First, you did the question about the Georgia law. I think it's important for us to note that while Georgia recently passed in 2015 House Bill 244, which is what you've called the Rachel's Law, we respectfully don't use the term Rachel's Law because it identifies Rachel, who's an African-American female, by name and by face. So we refer to it what the nation calls safe harbor laws, so that we don't actually isolate victims of sex trafficking by name or face or gender, if you will. And so the safe harbor law that you're referencing is House Bill 244. But before the state of Georgia got to that, I think it's important and fair to note that in the year 2000, the federal government had already passed the Trafficking Victims Protection Act, also referred to as TVPA. And then it was reauthorized in 2013. And while it emphasized protecting international victims of sex trafficking, they also pretty much set the stage for the rest of America and the states to oversee the enactment of legislation. And so as you would see from 2000 to 2015, Georgia did very little, but there were strides. For example, in 2001, Donzella James tried to pass Senate Bill 33 for felonies to charge pimps who were moving minors through the city and through the state of Georgia for prostitution. Then by 2001, you had the likes of Vincent Ford and Hetch and Kasim Reed, who moved another piece of legislation, Senate Bill 35, to address victimization of girls and boys under the age of 18. And then in 2004, CEASE reported a document which stated that the trafficking victims in the state of Georgia were 90% African-American. And then something unique happened. From 2004 to 2009, there was no legislation introduced and or passed after that point. And then in 2009, Renee Ottman, the senator, introduced Senate Bill 69 to expand the definition of mandatory rights of child reporting child abuse. And then Senate Bill 74, which did not pass, which was to increase the age for exotic dancers from 18 to 21 because of that pipeline that leads to sex trafficking. And so we had Senate Willard try to introduce House Bill 582 to decriminalize child prostitutes. And then by 2011, the state of Georgia introduced House Bill 200 to change the age of consent for minors and to implement criminalization of punishing pimps to 10 years imprisonment. And so now, 2015, we hear and we get House Bill 244, and now in 2016, what you just referenced is Senate Bill Resolution Number 7, which allows for individuals to pass a constitutional amendment in November at the election, so they have to scroll all the way down to the end of the ballot to see four amendments. And Georgia will be number 2. This emphasis of safe harbor, yes, on that piece of ballot will be number 2. For individuals in the state to consider to vote upon in an effort to finance or fund programs and services for victims of sex or human trafficking in Georgia. However, there is money already appropriated through programs like the Department of Juvenile Justice, the Department of Human Services, which could properly be utilized and appropriated to finance providing programs and services, more particularly safe houses as opposed to jailhouses. Right now in Georgia, the majority of the girls who are arrested are placed in jail, detention centers, and they are not receiving programs and services as being victims of human trafficking and sex trafficking. So we need safe houses, not jailhouses. And through the privatization of the prison industrial complex, the jail system seems to be the mode that they're using in an effort to house these girls. And we're hoping that the Senate resolution will address that. But at this stage, we won't know until after the monies have been properly appropriated. To your second and third question, what can parents do? So through Project 17Ps, we try and educate and inform. It is important that parents, one, know the signs of human and sex trafficking, and that is exactly what our programs and services are attempting to do, to to educate parents, but also the children. And so we offer two kits, particularly a guide for millennial parents who use social media and cell phones in an effort to allow them to communicate with their children, but whose children are not necessarily respectfully being monitored in the use of social media networks as well as their cell phones. We have found through apps like Kick, After School, Tinder, Instagram, Bat Pages, and a whole multitude of other social media apps and online internet services that many of these children are being lured. We also find that children are being lured right in their own school. Boys who are in middle school who have been employed by pimps who are older than them to secure the services, if you will, of young girls by making these young girls think that they like them. And then ultimately, these young girls are introduced to older guys by initially thinking that they're pursuing a relationship with a child that may be in middle school or the equivalent of high school. We have young girls that apply to ads online, thinking they're legitimate ads to secure employment opportunities, just to learn that they're being lured into music videos just for the sole purpose of engaging in sexual activity. We have young girls who think that they're applying to pursue careers as models and the like, just to learn that they're ultimately being secured and lured into a life of sex trafficking. Urban sex trafficking is uniquely different because some of the things that happen to urban girls do not happen to the girls coming from international communities or many girls from the surrounding demographical areas. And they include but not limited to gang involvement and how gangs are actually initiating young girls. And once these girls come into the gangs, these gangs then use these girls as not only sex objects to be sold, predictably and predominantly to white males, in conventions that come into cities like Atlanta, as well as sporting events and venues, but also to be used as drug mules and to be used to gain employment in retail outlets where those girls serve the sole purpose of giving them identity information and furtherance of these individuals in gaining in identity fraud. So when we talk about urban sex trafficking, we try to highlight the differences that our girls particularly experience, and some of our members of the LGBT community, our young boys as well, so that people are able to identify it, know that it exists, and understand that merely arresting girls and or identifying them as victims of sex trafficking based on sexual acts without giving any consideration to what is happening with the related offenses of prostitution and juvenile prostitution. That includes burglary, theft, the school-to-prison pipeline, truancy, runaways, drug addiction, use of alcohol, etc. All of those line up with girls and boys who are suffering as victims of urban sex trafficking.
So, Sherry, what can we say to these young men and these young girls? Because often when you listen to the stories of victims, they will point out to you that people tried to tell them. People tried to explain to them what was actually going on that they didn't quite see that others did. How can we break this situation down in a way that these young people can consume what you're telling them before it's too late?
That's an excellent question. One of the things that we have done, I have been recovering young girls since 2001. And one of the things that I find that ties into your question is this, lack of knowledge. But the information that finds its way to the communities are generally disseminated too late. There are multitudes of organizations out there that, quote unquote, provide programs and services for victims of sex trafficking. But very little, if any, of that information actually makes it into the hands of prospective victims or at-risk girls. So through the 17 P's, we go in early on, working within communities, with parents, with churches, and the like. We don't wait until they become the victim to get the answers to the questions that we need. Rather, we believe that as early as elementary school, children need to know things like, what are your private parts? What do you need to do when you're communicating with people of the opposite sex? What is appropriate behavior and inappropriate behavior? Little girls, you tell them, if you dance for me and shake your tail, I'll give you $2. Or if you come over and give me a kiss on my cheek, I'm going to give you $1. There are little things that we do that we don't necessarily understand that those eventually become problems for our girls and our boys. Sit on my lap. and I'll let you bounce up and down, that you tell that to a two-year-old. Well, by the time she's 10 and 11, she's not supposed to be doing the same thing again, or sitting on your lap and being aggressive with you, or certain ways that we teach girls to interact with males and giving hugs to them, and whether you should kiss this man on his lip or not when you're a little girl and he's not your father, and your father should not be asking you to do the same thing. Little things like that, that if we start teaching them early on, you know, Tupac used to say in one of his songs that we'll have a generation of boys that would hate the ladies that raise the babies. And what we're seeing now with young males, particularly in the African-American community, who are the dominant factors of selling black girls to white males, is their hate and disdain that many of them carry and possess. And when I speak to a lot of young men who have been engaged in the pimp game, if you will, and be about that quote-unquote life, many of them will tell me they have this disdain. Some people use the term misogynist, but it's deeper than that. Many of it comes from the pain that they carry of being raised in single-parent households, where mothers told them, you're never going to be nothing, or you're not about nothing, or I hate you, or you're just like your father. Many of these young men are wards of the state. They were victims of foster care systems that failed them. And while we focus on girls in foster care that are being lured into the life of prostitution, many of these pimps are coming through the same avenues and through the same doors. Many of these young men have also been victims of a failed criminal justice system that operates under a one-strike-out mentality. To that end, these young men are trying to, quote-unquote, create an economy for themselves. And in the process of creating this economy, they see girls, the same way people see drug trafficking, they now see sex trafficking as the avenue to make money. They're quick to say that I could flip a brick and get caught selling this kilo, but I could flip a chick a million and one times, Miss J, and I can make more money in the long haul off of her than I could off of the brick, and I'm less likely to get caught. And so these are things and patterns and practices that we have to share with our children as early as elementary school. We have to lay down the foundation of what sex trafficking is. We can't be afraid to talk about the conversation of teaching girls how to use their body, build self-esteem, allowing them to understand the power of self-respect and being able to look at that girl in the mirror and say that she loves herself. We have to be careful about the conversations that we have with young girls about materialism and possessions and money that has created a mentality of drugs, drunkenness, ignorance, illiteracy, guns, and greed that has plagued our community. We cannot be afraid to say to our boys that what you all are doing to our girls is wrong. In a generation where we're so pro-conversation about protecting black males, we lose ourselves in the conversations about what they're doing as pimps to our young girls. So all of this starts, with all due respect, as early as kindergarten, and teaching girls the power of their bodies, the power of their minds, teaching them the power of conversation, when to speak up, when it is appropriate to say no. All of that is how we protect our girls. They may say that these girls end up in these situations due to poverty and homelessness and runaways, but statistics don't support that in its entirety. They don't. There are things that happen to some girls that live in poverty that causes them to become victims of sex trafficking, where other girls who were born and raised in poverty go on to college, have successful careers, and never fall prey to that. So we deal with issues of self-esteem. We deal with issues of having that need to connect to a man, to feel loved, to be embraced. We deal with teaching them the power of love and what are healthy relationships, because so many of them end up as victims of sex trafficking because it's poor relationships, unhealthy relationships, not understanding the difference of what is and is not real and true love.
So when people say that prostitution is a victimless crime, you know all the reasons why that is wrong.
Prostitution and sex trafficking are two separate legal issues. Prostitution is consenting to sexual acts for profit. And then you have in that same umbrella sex workers or commercial sex workers. And over the last 10 to 15 years, they remind me all the time, Sherry, there's a difference between prostitution and sex trafficking. The girls on the street, the ones in the brothels, the girls that work, the IGs and everything. And I converse with them, and I proudly do, so that it enables me to learn what I need to learn to differentiate the two. Sex trafficking, again, goes back to a victim crime because these are individuals being forced into this life. They're being abused physically, mentally, emotionally, and psychologically. Many of them are being raped and sodomized. Many of them are being denied programs and services that deal with issues of abortion, sexually transmitted diseases, and HIV/AIDS. Although charged under criminal statutes in Georgia for prostitution, the position is this. Most of the sex workers are consenting. The group that we deal with are the unconsenting victims of sex trafficking who are being forced into that life. And that does make it a crime where they should be punished. And so we differentiate the difference of the victimless versus the victim-based crime.
So, Sherry, what do we say to men who are the pandering? What do we say to them about this crime that they are participating in?
One of the things that we want to say to them is you must look at this girl the way you would want someone to look at your daughter. And you might say, well, where do you get that from? I've had the opportunity and the occasion to converse with different Johns. And when I asked them, when you're there having sexual relations with this young girl, who do you see? They don't see the young girl, as it were. They say they block that out. So visualization is very important. If you saw your daughter or your niece, and we're not dealing with the pedophiles and incest for that moment, but if you saw your daughter and or your niece, do you now see the problem? A lot of it comes out of the misinterpretation of understanding as it applies to urban sex trafficking, that Black girls and Afro-Latino girls are hypersexual beings, that this is what their bodies are meant for. So that goes back to teaching these men to value and to respect these young women as such and these little girls as such. When they realize that these are just babies, many of them will tend to sort of say, at least, that if they understood it from that premise, they would sort of operate differently. But I say this to balance the conversation. Sex trafficking and drug trafficking is no different than the transatlantic slave trade, where the culture said it was acceptable to have slaves. And so throughout the United States, with an emphasis on the seven southern states, slavery existed for almost 400 years. The same mentality that allowed people to believe that they can own human beings then is the very same mentality that controls the sex trade industry now and allows the pimp to believe that you can own. So in conversing with our young men, we have to start again in the early stages. One of the programs we do is how to raise the pimp, because we teach these parents, you are the ones raising the pimp. The culture is the subprime teacher, but you are the primary teacher of raising a pimp. What you say to this little boy when he's growing up from K through fourth grade and from fourth to eighth grade is going to determine whether he respects a girl, whether he has respect or value for human life. There was a time when America emphasized international sex trafficking and slavery that churches sent millions of dollars overseas. Now that it's home for the last decade or more, almost 20 years in, very little, if any, emphasis by many churches is done to stop and cease the sex trafficking on our soil because we don't want to have the conversation. It is a culture within a culture within a subculture, and it's an underground where in the world we look at it as victimization. In America, we look at it as an act of immorality that these young girls want to do this, which is why we never believe in and we don't embrace the theory of survival sex. A little girl doesn't wake up at 10 and 11 years of age and say, I'm going to use my body to profit for the benefit of my family because they live in poverty. Someone has taught her those acts of sex to perform. Someone is soliciting her and teaching her how to secure johns and buyers, if you will. And so, again, it goes back to the conversation. We wait until they're in high school and college to have a conversation about sex. We in urban America particularly can no longer wait that long. We have to start early having the conversation, teaching them how to use mind, body, and soul, teaching young boys about morals, values, and respect. We have to be careful about the seeds of words of hate and disdain that we plant on our Black male children, particularly, so that they in turn learn to respect and to value life, respect and value women, and have respect and morals that they're willing to process in a way that when they see the wrong, they're willing to speak up about it. Everyone is too comfortable with being afraid to say that we are right now bringing our own community more harm than good, especially in a pro-police brutality era where that has become the focus of conversation of Black males in America. We even lose in that conversation the 9 Black girls that have been killed by police in the last 5 months of 2016. We don't speak about the plight of young Black girls in America. We get lost in our conversations. We have to revisit the conversation, rewrite the narrative so that we're protecting our young girls from being victims of sex trafficking by our own men.
Sherry, for our listeners who want to get involved with the 17 Ps, how can they reach out to you? How can they find out about this new program?
From September 13th through the 15th, we will be hosting one of the first ever social media collaborative programs that will include Cheryl McCollum of the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute of Georgia, 27 Million Voices out of Canada, and Project No Rest out of the University of North Carolina, along with a host of others. We will be using Instagram. We will be using Facebook and Twitter, hashtag 17P as in Paul, 17PS, 17PS, that will be the hashtag. We will start on the 13th with the storm, on the 14th with the chat, and on the 15th with the webinar. You can come to my website, sherryjefferson.com, www.sherryjefferson.com, or www.femalenotfemale.com. And going to that website will give you additional information on how you can participate. We are calling upon all of the 17 Ps to join in for this awareness, advocacy, and activity to educate, empower, and inform individuals what we need to do so that we can empower the generation to cease and desist engaging in sex trafficking of our youth.
Sherry Jefferson, thank you so much for sharing this information with our listeners. And thank you for what you're doing through the African American Juvenile Justice Project.
I thank you so much for having me, and I thank the WCLK family.